Hey everyone, welcome to episode 24 of the Tomo on the Rocks podcast. I'm here with my co-host Jack. How's it going, buddy?
Doing great, man.
And we're not alone today. We've got a special guest today. We have an Oshawa General of 3 years, my favorite junior hockey team. He's a Memorial Cup champion and a second round draft pick of the Calgary Flames. We welcome Hunter Smith. How's it going, buddy?
What's up, guys? How are you? I'm feeling good.
That's good. You ready to go?
I am.
How's quarantine treating you? You doing okay?
Yeah, you know, I think the weather changing a bit here has helped me a lot. But as I'm working through it, just like school started a bit, staying a little bit busier. But, you know, it's kind of hard to stay social distancing now when like everything's starting to loosen up. And, you know, we're all feeling pretty good about ourselves, but I know we got to be careful still.
Exactly. You got to have a nice backyard nowadays or somewhere you can sit out and enjoy yourself with the family. Have a couple of drinks. It's nice to be home and outside with some people in your circle, that's for sure. No, you at home or?
I'm just at home. I moved back in with my parents after I was done playing hockey. Just went back to school here, so just the easiest thing. So,
what have you been doing to keep you busy? You said you're doing some school too. What else have you been doing?
A lot of running, a lot of biking, pretty much anything to get me out of the house. Like I can't.
Sounds like the complete opposite of what I've been doing, that's for sure.
I'm like a Netflix binger in like a day, though. Like if a new season comes out, like it comes and goes quickly. And then if like I'm not a video game guy, so I don't really spend too much time on the couch, I guess.
Me and Jack have been on the video games a bit recently. I'm not usually a video game guy, but this quarantine's brought out the bad in me.
Never touched them. Now it's like all I have time to do.
What are you guys playing?
Mostly we're in the war zone right now.
Yeah, so you're coming out of the gulag?
Oh, yeah. I spent probably more time quarantine in the gulags than anywhere else.
That's funny. So do you want to try a drink on the rocks to get us started here? So we coordinated together to get the Howitzer Canadian Whiskey. We thought, you're a hockey player, let's get some a bit of a hockey drink on the podcast. So I'll just read something that's on the, just for a little backstory for the drink. It says, as Canadian as hockey in the military, Howitzer whiskey gives a nod to the sports slang for a booming slapshot and weaponry. Distilled mainly from corn, mellows for 5 years in American oak barrels with aromas and flavors of vanilla, dried apricot and caramel. And with a smooth finish, it begs to be enjoyed. So it rings in at 40%, made in Ontario, $35 at the LCBO. And it's kind of cool, actually. I was looking into it this morning, and one of the guys who is one of the founders is actually from Bowmanville. Didn't even know that, so kind of cool. So what we just do is give it a chug on the rocks to get the conversation going, and if you could just tell us kind of a couple words that describe it, and like what your ideal use is for this type of liquor, that's kind of what we do on here.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Are you a whiskey guy?
Not generally. This is fantastic, though. I'm not going to lie.
How you like that, Jack?
No, it's a lot smoother than... that's probably the smoothest thing we've forced ourselves to have on the show.
Only winced a little bit, so that's always a good sign. I like to say it's a good drink to give the girlfriend's parents. That's what my usually thing is for the whiskey. That's my go-to usage, that's for sure. That sounds a good one.
Two rock glasses and a bottle of whiskey and show up and just give one right to your dad and say, it's a dumb
thing. Yeah. Change the price tag, put it up $100 with the little pen, mark it on
an extra zero on it.
Then he'll try to help you and he'll go to the top shelf of his liquor cabinet. Like,
that's funny.
But I mostly drink beer, but I remember... my dad drinks a lot of whiskey. So when I actually turned 19, we went to the Keg for dinner and he always orders Manhattans, Perfects on the Rocks. And I just looked the waitress and I said, two of those, like bring it on out. Little did I know what I was getting into, just like it's like a 3-4 ounce, just straight liquor drink. And I spit it out like in the middle of a keg. I was 19. I had no clue.
It's like the babies that try beer for the first time. They think it's going to be great. And it's like, oh, I'm never drinking for the rest of my life. All right. You want to get into some hockey questions? You okay with that?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
Let's do it. So you're coming in at a bit of a, what is it, 6'7" frame? Would you say that's about right? Or is that's what the Hockey DB says when we did our research? Did you consider any other sports other than hockey, or was hockey kind of what you were born to do?
I was always a big baseball player growing up. Windsor is a kind of a hotbed for baseball. I actually won OFSA grade 9 in 9th grade with Vincent Massey Secondary School. We won OFSA, and we actually have a player right now. He was a year older than me, so he's in the 10th grade at the time, and he's playing AAA right now in Toledo for the Mud Hens, and he was kind of supposed to make the Tigers out of camp this year, at least I thought. His name's Jacob Robson, and I guess, like, obviously COVID came at worst time for him, but yeah, I was always a big baseball guy. Other sports, golf. I always had a lot of success at baseball. It was always, like, pretty natural.
Yeah. Just
league and always playing. Like, we made it to Canadians a couple times and stuff like that. And, yeah.
We were kind of thinking maybe basketball would be up there too, but that's not on the radar. Funny, we went to Vincent Massey Public School, me and Jack as well, that's in funny, Bowmanville. Yeah. That's pretty funny when you said that. Off cuff, yeah. That's funny.
I was like, I don't remember playing.
Yeah.
I don't remember either.
So did you find it difficult playing, like, getting into sports of that size? Is that something that was kind of troublesome to you at the beginning? Because I know it might cause some troubles on the ice.
I would say in hockey, I wouldn't say at the start. I think at the start, size was an advantage because just generally I was bigger and stronger than everyone. Yeah. Even in everything, like, I was bigger and stronger than everyone all the time. Like, I remember I used to get in trouble on the playground all the time, and it's like, I wasn't trying to hurt people, but it was like, just kind of just a, you know, it was my own environment. Like, so, that
kind of like that little kid you trucked in the warmups in Oshawa.
Exactly the same thing.
So. I saw that video on YouTube. I don't think I was in the stands for that game, but I saw that went viral, which is kind of funny.
It was terrible. I couldn't believe when that happened.
I kind of do remember that, actually. Pretty funny story to remember, but poor kid probably loved it. It's probably the highlight of his year.
Right up, and then, like, Broder, the backup, grabbed him, and, like, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
It's okay. And I was like, on the OHL hits of the week on OHL.com the next day. So you said you're from Windsor, correct? So you ended up playing for Windsor originally, and then were you traded your first season to Oshawa?
Yeah, so what happened was I was originally drafted to the Spits and ended up playing Junior B down here in LaSalle in the GOJHL. Okay. And had an okay year, but I ended up I played 15 games up, just like when they needed me around, when they had injuries and stuff. So I got a little bit of a taste that first year. And then second year went into camp. Camp was kind of wrapping up. And I, like, was just kind of running numbers in my head, which is a terrible thing to do. But when you know you're kind of slated for that fourth line role, like, it really eats away at you. And I was like, there were 16 of us or something. And I was like, okay, well, only 12 can play. So someone's got to go. And it was funny. I grew up, I never had a TV in my room or anything. And that day I put a TV in my room and, like, set up my PlayStation, and I had, like, Entourage discs, like, ready to go. And I turned on the first episode, and, like, not 10 minutes in, my phone rings, and it's like a random number, but I knew exactly who it was. I picked it up. It was a GM, told me I was traded. So I get up and get out of my room, and my parents' room is right across from mine, and she just sits up immediately. And it's like, what happened? And I'm like, that reaction wasn't, like, organic like that. Yeah. You knew what happened. Yeah. So I guess they actually found out at noon, and they were packing all day, like, doing all my laundry and stuff. Like, so that's then hilarious.
We ended up driving up. It's crazy how young you are at that age, though. Really, like, it's not even surprising that they would go to the parents first. Like, what is it? What were you, 15 at the time?
Well, I would have been older. I'd have been. I probably would have just turned 17 or wasn't quite 17.
Okay. So what was that like, kind of getting traded from the hometown to Oshawa? And what were your first thoughts on Oshawa? Because I know Jack and I definitely, like, Jack, what were your thoughts of if you got traded to Oshawa, what would you think?
Well, based on, it's always funny hearing an outsider's opinion on what we think Oshawa is. might be a lot different than what someone coming into it is. We kind of think of it as more like it's cleaned up their image a bit more recently, but at the back in our heyday of like high school, it wasn't seen as like a great place.
No, I get that 100%, especially, but like, I think what you guys wouldn't understand is I think Windsor kind of has that reputation as well. So I see these like I'm like all over TikTok now. And when I see these, like people post about the worst cities in Ontario, one where like Windsor was last, and then the next one Oshawa was last. I just,
you get your pick of the litter.
Yeah, I love both cities to death. Leaving at 17, like it was kind of hard, like 3 weeks into high school, and then where I went, Henry Street and Whippy, they actually started a week earlier because they had like a fall, they called it like fall break or something.
Okay.
And middle of like October or November or something. And so like I was even further behind when I moved. So I think like other than adjusting to high school, like and like meeting the guys, like everything was pretty seamless for me. Like the house I moved into is fantastic. Like that's my family now, you know, like I'd go up there any day of the week and just stay with them.
Who'd you bill it with at the beginning?
Wade and Patty Kewen.
Oh, okay. So he played for the team, right? I'm trying to rock my memory.
So
no?
They had, I think it's Shea Kewen played for the team.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We billeted Shea Kewen. Oh, okay. And they were related to him until they moved in with him.
Oh, okay. Like, interesting.
Kind of weird situation how that worked, but.
Yeah. Okay, because the name rang a bell. I was wondering there, but that makes sense now. Was there a lot to do in Oshawa as a kid? You just kind of have like the normal high school life, or what? What's it like when you first move in?
In Oshawa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you just at the rink every day?
Well, it's kind of it's a little bit different when you're in high school in the OHL. Like as we like talk more about hockey, like you'll understand how progression of like being a 17-year-old in the OHL changes from being a 19 or a 20-year-old like pretty quickly. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just – I remember the first day I rolled up to my billet, said hi, and they actually played golf that day. And she looks at me and she goes, there's a lasagna, like, in the fridge. Its instructions are on top. Like, whenever you're hungry, just throw it in the oven for 45 minutes and, like, have at it. And, like, we'll be back in 4 hours. And I was like, okay. So, it's like they have no idea who I am. And I literally met them for 10 minutes and they were like, we're out of here, and left me in their house, like, with a key and everything.
Lasagna's gone by the time they get home.
That was everybody's dinner and I just buried it all.
That's funny. I think although the younger years of OHL is definitely really important, what we kind of want to get into is kind of the older years. You kind of alluded to how it changed. Do you want to talk on what you mean when you say it kind of changes from your younger years to older years? And I think that's kind of what we want to get into on this podcast, if you want to talk about that.
What I was fortunate about is, like, I only played 30 games my first year in Oshawa, maybe 35 or 34. And I think I had one assist or something. Pretty poor showing, like, as far as, like, where I was drafted to be. I have 2 years in the league and only 45 games played with 2 points. So I kind of knew if I wanted to like continue to play, I was going to actually have to apply myself. And that's what I did that summer. And fortunately enough, I came into camp, had a good camp, did well, got an opportunity, and then just kind of never looked back from there. And 2 games into the year, I ended up playing on a line with Scott Lawton at the time. And then when he's my center the whole year, like it was pretty seamless for me to like continue that upward trajectory. Just to, you know, kind of feed off what he's doing and be an asset to him as well. But that's kind of how it took off to the older years. But I think a big thing around our team, more so like just like the lifestyle, was that we were progressively getting better. So yeah. I think I would have had the fun that we had we not been as successful. Obviously, like junior hockey was fun either way, but us being so good allowed us to get a little more leash. So,
yeah,
without a doubt. And I remember, I don't remember, like, I've been a season ticket holder for reference, Mike. My parents have had tickets for a long time. And I remember, like, distinctly between the two seasons that you're talking about where, like you said, you went from, like, 2 points to having, like, 40 points the next season, which is a lot because the OHL is less games too, right? It's not an 82. It's more of, like, a 62 or 64. So it's pretty crazy to see that progression. And kind of as a fan, you could see that the team was going to dominate in the next coming years, right? So that was kind of cool. I think on that point, another big factor was your coach, DJ Smith. Do you want to talk about him for a bit? Do you have any stories with him? I know he was a coach with the Leafs and now a coach with Ottawa, the head coach. I just remember sitting across the rink from him and just hearing him barking the whole game. Seems like a team guy. You could hear his voice all around the rink. Do you have any stories or comments about DJ?
That was like his like biggest knock was that he just screamed the whole time and he wasn't going to be able to do that at the next level. And like, as pathetic as it sounds, like him yelling at me for 3 years or yelling at all of us, like I'd be skating up the ice and I'd hear him yelling. So I wouldn't even have to think about what to do because he was just telling you.
The guy was definitely hitting the fisherman's friends by the end of the second period. There's no way that guy had a voice.
A couple of hostages.
It's like Nick Nurse.
Good story for Doggy. So what happened was we were the top rated team the whole entire year, that final year. So yeah. We were slowly getting more and more leash as far as like what he would allow us to do on the weekends, like after or like during the week, because none of us were in, there was a couple young guys in school, but other than that, like none of us older guys were in university. So we literally went to the rink, went home, watched Netflix and like play video games. So one day it was a Tuesday and I'll never forget this ever. And before practice, somehow they found out the ice in North Bay for the Friday game was not like was broken. Like their freezers were broken. So that weekend we ended up only having, we usually had 3 games a weekend. We only had 2 that weekend. So we didn't play till Sunday, I think at home. I could be wrong, but we didn't play till the Sunday regardless. And so we knew it was Tuesday night and we didn't have to play for 5 days. So he knew what we were thinking. So he just said, okay, like you guys do you, be here tomorrow at 9 a.m. So obviously if you guys are going out in Oshawa, where are you going?
You going to the Junction?
Corral. I thought it
was Corral.
Oh, baby. Even better.
Tuesday ladies at the Corral?
Oh, Tuesday. I should have caught on there. I didn't
girls
even
night,
catch
baby.
It. I should, yeah.
A little girls' night action. Never a bad time.
So we're all just like, we know it's going to be a big party out there. We're like, all right, let's go. So we all go. We have a great time, whatever. And like, we're not worried about like practice the Wednesday. Like, he'll just bag us at the end and like, that'll be whatever. But yeah, that'd be there at 9 a.m. So I get there at like 8:57 or something.
Yeah.
He is like the sliding doors open and he is standing right there. He just looks at me and he goes, where is everybody? And I was like, what are you talking about? Where is everybody? He goes, no one's here. So I like walk into the room and there's like one other guy there and there's supposed to be like 12 or 13 of us. So what ends up happening is he says like, everybody like, or he says, when everyone gets here, come to my office. And he goes to his office. So we go to his office, like everyone gets there at like 8:15 or something. And we are just like, we are so dead. Like it's not even fun. So we end up strolling into his office. He tears us a new one. He goes, everyone grab your shoes and like you're out in the bowl. So like usually we just like do like a light workout, ride the bike for a bit, like whatever.
Yeah.
We are just doing laps of the arena, like on the stairs. And that was like his way of saying, like, I'll give you guys some leash, but like when I say there's rules, like you follow those rules. And like that was always kind of like our way of like, how do we like follow that like line to not fall on the wrong side of it with them? And like obviously that day we just pushed a little too hard and then he tightened us up.
So why does it have to be? Why does the practice have to be at 9 a.m.? Would 2 p.m. not work? Or
no, because the high school guys go at 2, but we always went in every morning at 9 a.m.
Oh, okay. I see. I see.
Okay.
That's a tough go. That's a good story. That's funny. And that kind of brings up the next thing I was going to talk about, which is something that I've always wondered, because there's a lot of OHL teams. Like, I went to school at Queens and Kingston. There's London Knights with Western. So you guys are kind of going on these roadies with to like places that have these college towns where maybe you'd want to coincidentally stay an extra night. Do you guys ever get the opportunity? Like, do you ever stay in hotels for like double headers in a place like that? Or is it usually just when you go out to like Sarnia or like Flint when you're staying overnight?
So generally you, if you're on a road trip, the problem is with Oshawa, we don't have a lot of road trips as like overnighters. And like when we did, it was generally like Sudbury or like North.
Jesus.
Because if we
played the, in the London, hubs,
the Mecca.
Lucky is if we played in probably Windsor or Sarnia, and then played in London on the Saturday or Sunday night, I guess. And then, but even then, if we played the Saturday, we're leaving right after. We always left right after the game, so yeah. It's kind of hard to like iron out those times to actually get a night somewhere.
Yeah, it was just something that I kind of always wondered. But when you're like 2 hours away from Kingston, I guess you're hopping in the bus, not going down to like stages or something like that. But just, I guess some people aren't even of age though at that point. Like it's not, it's a bit different, right? Like how's that? How's that dynamic?
It's like, it's kind of like you try and help out the young guys, but like you don't really want to push too hard. And like our rule that year was kind of like, if you're of age, like you're free, but like don't drag anybody else into it. Like if you're legal, I can't tell you to not go out to the bar, but like don't drag them along, get them in trouble just because we were, I think we were so good is we didn't need that, like something to happen and have that, a big black cloud over that year. Right. And just would have created a distraction and kind of nonsense. So like that was kind of his thought process through it.
Exactly. You're kind of talking about the big year. So if we can get back kind of on the path of hockey a bit, first want to hit you with a question about like, we were talking about kind of the 6'7" frame before, and I just remember games when you just step out there, take 3 steps and make a regular body check, but at your height, you'd get penalized just for being big, right? Was that a bit frustrating? And like, did you have to have a conscious effort of like, do I need to hit this like 16-year-old 5'5" guy? Like, or am I going to be thrown out of the game for 5 minutes, right? Was that something that was always in your head every time you stepped on the ice?
I would say definitely in the back of my head, and that was always a problem growing up, like with everything. Like when I was in minor hockey, that was an issue, and they used to hand out like head checking penalties. There were 2 minutes or 2 and 10, I believe, so it was a misconduct but you stayed in the game. And I actually remember in junior B it was a 2 and a 10 as well, and I think you got thrown out in junior B. I think I got thrown out of like 16 games that year. Like I remember I drove up to Burlington for like this like showcase, and I got thrown out second shift, and I just remember walking out, and he's like, "You're the biggest idiot I've ever seen." And it's just like, I don't know what else can you do?
I distinctly remember you making body checks that were like shoulder to the head, but it's because your shoulder was at his head, and his, you know what I mean? Like it must have been pretty tough. I remember that.
There was one hit, kind of hard to ask you to remember a specific event, but it was against Windsor, and just because I'm from Windsor and I worked out here, I know all the guys. Yeah. And Peter Yazkov like picked up the puck in his corner, and he kind of like looked behind him, and then he looked up ice and saw I was coming at him, and he just ducked like this, and like I didn't move at all. Like I didn't take a stride for like 10 yards or 10 meters, whatever. And I hit him, and I just got thrown right out of the game. And like when you watch it back, like I remember I had like a call with the league or whatever, and they were just like, yeah, like you're not suspended, like this is completely legal hit, like this was the wrong call. And it's just something that I had to deal with, right?
Yeah.
So they have like the Shanahan calls in the OHL, like would you get on the phone with like David Branch?
Wow.
Or
oh wow,
they have calls. Yeah, we're in Kingston, and I really wanted to fight this guy, and
like, who was it?
It was Kraus. But
oh.
Of course he did.
He was 17, I was 19. It's like he was getting drafted fifth overall to the show or whatever he ended up getting drafted. Yeah. So I don't blame him at all, but it was my job to try and do that.
Yeah.
So something happened and he like grabbed me after the whistle and we kind of tussled and we both got, I think 4 minutes. So we went to the box and then the period ended. So I always use black tape on my stick and I like deliberately pasted over with like one white strip on the blade, like the wrong way that you tape a stick.
Yeah.
And it was a Friday night game and we played them on Sunday again. So I wrote Sunday on the stick. And then I went back to the box after the thing. And I was like, okay, well, if you're not going to fight me tonight, I like, tapped on the glass and showed it to him.
And no way.
And then I had a call the next day. And the coaches asked me if I did this, whatever. And Branch was on the phone. And he literally described what I did word for word. And I was like, that's exactly what happened. Like,
you got it.
That's hilarious. Well, you didn't shy away though. You'd love to. I remember you just love to smile when you were like throwing fists too, right? You just love to laugh at the guys. Was that like a mental thing or what? Or were you just like that much bigger and stronger?
I know I can kill
these people. It was literally comical.
It's funny that they're fighting me.
And I think when you're 19 in the league, you have there's very few guys that were older than me, and there was very few guys that were bigger than me.
Yeah.
And none.
None, yeah.
Didn't have anyone. It was, like, very easy for me to, like, kind of do what I wanted and not really have to worry about it kind of thing. And that's where, like, you probably saw that, like, charisma, I guess, out of me. But yeah, like, I don't know. It was just – when I was 16 or 17, like I probably wasn't like that because I knew that there was somebody that could ultimately just like make me shut up for the rest of my career. So
I think we're kind of on the fighting topic, so we might as well keep rolling with that. Along that lines, was there a couple tough guys who you found that were your toughest fights or guys you were genuinely scared of? I know for me, if I rack my memory, maybe like Nick Ritchie might have been one of the guys who were like the toughest guys in the league. Am I wrong in saying that?
Best in the OHL.
Yeah. Or AHL too, wherever. We got a couple follow-up questions with this too in the AHL. But yeah, maybe OHL, maybe AHL. What are some of the toughest guys you had to square up with?
So Ritchie was like a different one because it was like the Oshawa-Peterborough rivalry.
Yeah.
Like I think we'd always kind of be chippy with each other. But again, just another guy who like, he knew his value versus mine and like it was greater, which is fine. But like I had to kind of fight that. And the one time we did end up fighting was actually in Peterborough. And I remember he came up to Del Cole before the puck even got dropped and he slashed him. And I was just like, what is going on right now? So I started to like skate over and he slashed him again. And I just like, had to drop my stuff. And like, the puck didn't even like, it wasn't even like lined up yet. Like, it was not even close.
Branch has already got you on speed dial. He's like, I gotta ring this guy up again.
Again?
Famous line DJ would always say is there's no rules in fighting. So what ended up happening was his jersey got completely torn, like, because they were wearing a breast cancer awareness jersey. So like they're a thin material. Completely shredded down the middle. If you could see the fight, like at the end, he's skating off without a jersey on, and that's my excuse. I really had nothing to grab onto, and at the end, like, I'm just holding him out like this. And like, he's just like, keeps hitting me. And I'm just looking at the ref. I'm like, can you please do something? Because like, I can't let go. Because
with the wingspan, you could stand on like one side of the boards and push the guy to the full other side of the fucking boards. It wouldn't even matter.
Pick a fight.
Yeah. That's funny.
Just holding them out like that.
What are your thoughts on a bit more serious question? What are your thoughts on kind of the way fighting is going? I know in the OHL, I'm not too up to date on, obviously when I went away to school, I stopped watching it a little less, but you got like the suspensions with 5 fights, 10 fights, things like that as well. In the NHL, it's slowing down. What are your kind of thoughts on that? And in regards to fighting in the NHL?
I actually talk about this a lot with my dad, especially I think because it was kind of part of my career. So you actually talk about guys that like, I was like, would fight and like guys that I was like, I kind of knew were going to give me a harder time than others. So on Erie, they had Curtis McDermott.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Duffy.
25, like very, very strong guy. And like, we actually tried to fight in the OHL, but we were like, we were squaring up too long and the refs ended up coming in. And I think 2 years later, I think my second year pro, we ended up fighting. And like, straight up, like he just knocked me right the hell out. Like, I remember.
You got a couple shots in there, but he's a tough, he's big, eh? Holy shit.
He hit me and I just fell right down and I like my everything just locked up and I was out. And then I looked up and I was like, well, something's wrong. And he's just like, let go. And then he went off. I rolled over and my tongue wasn't sitting down in my mouth properly. Like it just like something was completely off. And like I just looked at my trainer and I was like, my jaw is in half right now. And like,
oh my God,
just a clean break, like right down here.
He's out the next shift.
He's like, I gotta go you again. I gotta take you.
Lucky punch.
I'm in a bucket, like trying to get the all like the blood, and then like your phlegm just starts coming. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like untying a skate with one hand, and I'm holding a bucket here. Oh. And there's a bunch of like guys that weren't playing right there. And one of the trainer walks in and they go like, what are you doing? Like, help him out. Like, he's got a broken jaw right now. Like, and then, like the guys come over and start helping me get undressed. But I ended up going to the hospital and just spent, I ended up spending, I think 2 days in the hospital because they couldn't operate on me that night. And then I ended up getting surgery the next night. But
and you just fought a 5'2" guys because he couldn't reach your jaw. I also saw you, when you were in the AHL, we're kind of jumping forward on the schedule here, but you fought Paul Bissonnette. How was that like?
That was interesting because like he obviously had his like he wasn't as big as he was now, but he was definitely he had his Twitter going.
Yeah, you knew of him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. So, I remember cross checking a guy kind of high after the whistle, and I knew we were staying out because we were already out and. Mm. I looked at the bench and like he hopped right over and like I was like, here we go. And at the time, Colton Orr was my line mate and they actually never fought in pro or like ever. So then he comes up and lines up like right next to me, or it just like worked out that way based where the draw was. Like that's fine. And he's just like, do you want one, kid? And I was like, well, if I'm gonna like help myself, I'm gonna have to fight some of these guys. So like, and it was a pretty bad fight, but I was 20 years old. Not really much to complain about. Obviously, he's a bit smaller than me, but much more experienced. So I just like try to do it and try to do my best.
Do you listen to Chicklets podcast?
Sometimes. A lot of not like religiously, just kind of when I see guys maybe I want to hear from. So
yeah.
That's pretty cool though, to have a story of fighting a guy and then he's like, he's probably arguably one of the biggest guys in the NHL right now in regards to media, other than like Bob McKenzie and the breaking news guys, right? Pretty cool.
No, everyone just wants the funny shit. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yep.
I think maybe we'll close off the OHL talk. Talk about the Mem Cup run, because I know, like, as a fan of Oshawa, that was just a massive run, absolutely dominant. Never seen anyone shut down McDavid like Dakota Mermis did. Do you want to kind of talk about that run a bit and how that season kind of came together, and then we'll talk about the memory after?
Well, obviously there's like a lot of big pieces that came in at the trade deadline.
Literally big.
Yeah. Huge. Then Mermi, Peterson, Mistley. I don't want to forget anybody. I feel like an ass.
They'll probably listen, so they'll probably be pretty mad.
They'll be up in arms for this one.
But we're gearing up for that year, like, because we didn't trade for anyone really the year before. I think we got Johnny McGuire and maybe we got Johnny McGuire earlier.
And was he the guy who would just fight a ton?
Yeah.
That guy was hilarious.
So then we loaded up with like four guys, traded tons of picks. And it was kind of, I think we played Missy in the first series or Peterborough. And I forget, actually, to be honest. And then I remember whoever we were going to play next, they were playing Kingston And I think our record against Kingston that year was like 2-5-1 or something. Really? So we were kind of like, if Kingston comes here, like, we're actually kind of in one.
Was that when they had Bennett and Watson, or was that after your time? Yeah, okay.
So that was bad. And then, well, they obviously ended up losing. I think they were up 3-0 and lost the sweep on the way back, like on, or something weird like that. But
really,
anyways, because that wasn't with McFarland, so that wouldn't make sense. No, that wasn't with McFarland. But and then North Bay was a team we got. I think we got. Did we get swept by them the year before with Barkley Goodrow and all those guys? So.
Hey, I was a young lad. I think that's your thing to remember.
We only remember the wins. I don't know. Try not to focus on the losses.
But, got killed by, like, he almost single-handedly beat us the year before.
Remember that. Yeah.
And that next year to kind of overcome North Bay, obviously they didn't have Goodrow, but they still had, like, most of their team.
Yeah.
And I think that's as long as 6 games. So.
I do remember that. That was a tough series, yeah. Did you have home ice against Erie?
Against Erie? Yes.
Yes.
I remember because it was in Oshawa that you guys won. I remember that. Like, it's probably still have the video on my phone of the celebrations. It's pretty crazy. Eh? Like I was saying before, the shutdown on like McDavid, that must have been just a crazy feeling, eh? Can you describe that?
It was like a no-joke operation, like, everything was like kind of based around just making sure we had our matchups at home, especially at home. Like, and it was really a chess game. And the biggest thing with playing like that is it is frustrating, but if you get everyone to buy in, we kind of reach the end goal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ended up reaching the end goal. So everyone who bought into that system, even if you got on the ice and as soon as he gets on, you just get right off and you let the guys get out there. You're part of the team and you're doing what needs to be done. Yeah. You know, that's how a 20-man unit essentially beats him. But between Ken, Murmy, Brownie, Cass, Latz, and me, like, we played at home. We played pretty much 95% of the time against them, short of power play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously Cass, Brownie, and Murmy taking the brunt of that work. And then me and Latz just being kind of on the wings, acting like we were doing something, but
yeah, whatever. putting fear in his eyes every time he stepped on the ice. That's for sure.
But honestly, knowing first overall and watching, like, we knew what we had to do, and it was nice to, you know, just kind of put those dreams to bed for him. Even though, you know, he wanted, but we wanted him more, I guess. You know, they had a pretty good team that year too. So
they were a bit younger, though. Was that what it was? You guys were kind of more the vets, and they had some younger lads on the team.
Yeah, because they ended up winning the OHL the next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Was that with Strom? Strom maybe.
Next year, and then they won 2 years later.
Okay. So how was it? Like, the member was in Quebec City. Was that correct? It's funny. I had my Wasaga trip for like grade 12 high school. So for some reason I made the decision to stay in and go for my Wasaga high school trip for the weekend instead of going up to the member with my family. It's like, honestly, one of my bigger regrets, because it just seemed like just such an awesome city and like such an awesome event. So I ended up missing out, but my parents have so many, and my sister and my mom have so many fun stories of that weekend. What was it like to play with some guys like Dreisaitl, who's playing in the NHL now, Morrissey, like Freddie Gauthier is playing for the Leafs. How was that? And how were you guys feeling going into that tournament against a couple powerhouse teams?
I think the big thing was Dreisaitl, because he came back from the NHL.
Like, yeah, he
played 35 games that year in the NHL, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I think I'm wrong saying Duclair did, but I feel like he played in the NHL and got sent back too. I don't know. That could be wrong.
We'll just say he did. That's okay.
It's more impressive.
So it was more unexpected that he made a team like the second year out of camp or something. Like, there was some weird story, but anyways, there was a lot of good players in that tournament. Like, as far as you look at our team stacked up in the NHL, we have Brownie, Del Cole, Sorelli, Murmy finished this year when COVID hit. He was in the NHL. He was up. Really? McCarron played a bit. Appleby played a bit.
Is he with the Habs still, McCarron?
Oh, I think he got traded to Nashville.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, I think like some of those teams like just had like so many guys go to the NHL. Like Kelowna has Dubé. Like Dubé would have been a 16-year-old. And yeah. The only reason I'm like from Calgary, but and then Dreisaitl, Morrissey.
Yeah, they were stacked.
Yeah, that's a lot of names.
So did you guys go in as like an under? Was that like considered? I don't know if you guys followed the media then, but you guys were probably considered an underdog, although you had a bunch of older players. Is that true? Or
that was kind of the whole story. That's the story that like the narrative we led into the whole time, because yeah. I remember people the whole, like even our whole year were saying we're not really the real deal, and we were number one for like the whole year, except the final rankings was the only time we weren't number one. So like, We felt it was us against the world, and like that's kind of the narrative that we played into, and I think it ended up paying off because it was just we don't deserve anything, so we have nothing to lose. So let's just prove everyone wrong.
Especially after riding high after Erie, then.
Exactly.
Moving on.
Yeah. Like, you'd think it would be like not surmountable to beat McDavid, and then it's just like how much further can we go? It's funny, stupid story, but. My dad, my mom, and my sister would always, they'd commute from the hotel to the rink for every game. And there was like a players only limo that would take like the family of the parents. But my dad would just roll, he'd have a couple beers and then he'd roll up to this cab and just get right in. Cause they don't like ask for ID of the players, right? So every single night he'd take the cab, the like players family cab right to the rink, and they take him right to the front door and he go in. And one night he had a couple pints and he was like, Sorelli, he's the next big guy, like he's like a great player for the Generals, and like sure as shit in that final game he scored the winner. It's like probably my dad's biggest thing on his resume right now is predicting that finals. But I wish I was there to just sit in the parents cab and go to the rink. I think that's a pretty funny story. My dad always tells me, he's like, oh, I predicted who was going to win that finals. Like, it was all him, even though he was like a walk-in, blah, blah, blah. So I always laugh at that story. That's pretty funny. So then from there, how was the party in Quebec after that? Did you guys get up to anything there, or was it just kind of low-key after that?
It's funny that you mentioned earlier, like, people not being able to drink and stuff. Like, we moved our needle for guys because then everyone who was 18. Was
exactly. So
I think there was like two or three guys that like weren't like legal. And cause we didn't have like you said, we had a very, very old team. Like we had 3 20-year-olds, then probably 14, 19-year-olds. So then the rest, if they were 18, I think we had
good type of vets.
And so that their early birthdays would have been 18. So
yeah.
So it was – no, it was – I actually talked about this the other night with some people about after we went to – I went back to the hotel, had some food because I think it was like a 5 o'clock game or something. So we actually had more time to go out than we planned. And then I know the big bar out there in Quebec City, I think it's called the Dago Bear, and it's like a 3-4 floor nightclub, and that's where we went. And it was kind of a blur from there, and then woke up, got on the plane, and the said, plane. "See you guys back in Oshawa."
A plane?
Oh yeah, we chartered. Yeah.
Really?
There too, or just home?
Yeah. Not like we flew private, but it wasn't like a.
It's like Drake Air.
Tom's dad got on that one too.
No, Rocco took care of us. He was always fantastic with that stuff. So
oh wow,
now his son's playing, one of the best players on the team. He's a good player. I've went obviously like haven't been to as many games since I went away from school, but every time I've seen him play, he looks really good out there. Small in stature, but makes up for it in play.
When I saw him here when I was playing, I would skate with him in the summer a bit, and he was looking good going into his first year, and then He had a good year last year. And then this year, I think he's supposed to go in the second or third round, I think. That's what it is.
So.
I believe. Last one I saw was really like 45 or something. I could be wrong. I don't want to speak wrong. But
it's funny because when I was watching, it was a recap of your finals win in the MEM. And he's like throwing up the one. And he's like probably, what, 10 years old at that time? He's right in the front of the pitcher. And now he's playing for the team. And that's pretty funny, actually.
Well, if you watch the game back after we win, like even like DJ's kid he like Ty's walking through the line, shaking all these Kelowna guys' hands. Get the hell out of here, you kid! Like,
before that year, did you get drafted, or was it after that? Before that year, correct? Yeah. And you got drafted in the second round to Calgary. We were interested in, you were drafted by Brian Burke, correct? Do you have any stories about Berkey? I know you're definitely a Berkey player, that's for sure. A lot of truculence. So do you have any stories with him, or did you talk to him prior during the draft time?
So DJ told me before the draft, he said, if you get picked, I bet you're going to Calgary.
Wow.
And I had a pretty good meeting with them at the combine, and just like from what I was feeling, I was like kind of, as I was like at the draft, you see the picks go. I think probably after like pick like 40, like 6 or 7, that was like my next, like, if I don't go at 54, like, I don't know where I'm going to go, because that was Calgary's second round pick. So, yeah. And I ended up going and it was great, but it's so funny because like Berkey is the greatest guy ever. And he shows this brash, like, just like on TV with his slick back hair and his tie. He's so laissez-faire, and like he seems arrogant and rude, but like he's not that way at all in person. So it's like, it's so funny that people like portray him that way in their head, because it's not at all how he is.
That's funny.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Wow. So do you talk to him like in the combine, or is it like a different amount of brass, or what, like when you said you had the combine interviews, who's involved in that? I'm just curious.
It's different for every team. We might not have been there for Calgary, weird enough.
He already knew he wanted to draft you, so he didn't have to show.
He saw the measurements and he's like, I'm in.
It's 7 guy. But yeah, no, it's like, it's different for every team. And like every team has like different tactics. Like some teams like shove a camera in your face and like, it's like 2 feet in front of your face and they're just asking you all these like weird questions. And it's just, it's kind of different, but I don't know. For the most part, the interviews aren't too hard. They try and shake some of the guys that are like higher picks, see if they're going to be arrogant or like how they're going to act. And I think Burke came out a couple weeks ago and said they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Anyways, because it was just such a bad interview, right?
Yeah, that's funny. So you must have nailed it then, obviously. Good
interview.
They're
probably terrified.
They were too scared not to draft you.
He said, you're picking me.
I walked in, you know, they're picking me, and put take anyone's hand, I just walked right back.
So how was that transition to the AHL, and how was it like, so you went to Stockton, how was it like playing there? Any stories from there?
So, I don't know if you know anything about Stockton, California, but
I didn't even know it was in California, so that starts off good right there.
Exactly. So, if you like look at Stockton, it's like known for its like crime and like gangs, and it's a bad place. Diaz brothers are from there. If you follow,
that's like the most that I knew from it.
So, basically what happened was the first day, or like one of the first days, they had these cop liaisons come in and just kind of talk to us about what's going on. And like, they were like, "Hey, don't wear red." And like, we play for the Stockton Heat, which are Calgary jerseys. All of our gitch is red. And I'm all like, red. This is a good start.
That's crazy.
They said, like, after games or at night or anything, if you're down here by the rink, like, just, like, if you stop at a red light and, like, you see something that's kind of sketchy, like, just go through the light. Like, no one will care. Like, cops aren't going to pull you over back here. Like, it's not a big deal. They would say, if someone has their lights off at night, you, like, flick them to turn them on. And they said, if someone has their lights off, don't flick them, because it's generally like a gang initiation thing that they have to like now like do something to you or your car or like whatever. Oh. So like, they might have just been scared. It's like probably good information just in case it happens.
Yeah.
And then they gave us a map, and it was so funny because like in Stockton, the rink is very nice. The ballpark next door is very nice. And there's a hotel right next to both, which is also very nice. And they all share like a big parking lot.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, don't go to the red areas on this map. And there was this like little green dot in the middle of this big red circle. And that was the rink, the hotel, and the ballpark. And the rest red for like 3 miles. And I was just like.
So did you pick up video games then when you were there or what?
Yeah, there's not much of a nightlife actually. Sorry. And we were on the road and we got back. I think it was an Irish pub. I want to call it, was like Shenanigans or something. Okay. And that was the name of it.
Sounds Irish.
It got like a drive-by shooting. Like someone went and like shot at it. So they were like, we like don't recommend you go there because like we're expecting like a response. The cops came
in.
Oh my
god.
Holy shit. When I asked that question, I literally thought, not gonna lie, it was in Calgary and it was close to Calgary. So I was like, hey, what was it like there? That's not what I thought I was gonna get for an answer, but that's an even better answer. That's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Hey, like, oh, California. And it's like, no, like you don't know where I lived in California. Like it was like an hour and a half from San Fran, and there was a, what was it? There's a place like 40 minutes away. I forget what it's called, but like it was a nice place to go shop or whatever. And there was actually a restaurant probably like 5-6 miles away from the rink that was pretty good.
Did you get to travel like, down to like the good areas of Cali then when you're there?
So road trips were San Diego. Yeah, it was heaven. San Antonio, Austin, Texas, like the road trips were the best. Like I was just like,
thank God it's a road stretch.
Bit better than
anywhere, and it's like, oh no, but like you have to go to San Diego for 5 nights completely paid. I'm like, okay. Like,
thank God.
That's funny. The
best away record probably.
We're in San Diego one day and I was like, I'm going to the beach every day, like I don't care. So like I went to the beach after morning skate one day and like I didn't do anything, but I just like ate lunch on the beach and then just kind of like hung out, whatever. So like a couple guys knew I went and I was -2 after 2 shifts. And I was like, oh my God. So we go in the room after the first and one of the guys looks at me and he goes, hey Rig, like get the sand out of your boots, buddy. Like we're not at the beach right now. Like wake up. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, it's like, I finally got out of Stockton. Give me a chance.
I just wanted to live.
I saw on YouTube, there was like a legendary play where you got a goal in a fight in the same play. You want to talk about that? That's a pretty good story.
Extremely weird situation, I might add. Like, so that was, I think that was my first shift of the game. As soon as I stepped on the ice, and Curtis Gabriel played in the OHL for Owen Sound. I don't think he ever got traded. So he played for Owen Sound, and we never fought. I don't know if because he was older or just went pro sooner. Anyways, we never did. And I don't remember like saying anything to him in warmups or saying anything to anybody. And it's a couple minutes into the game, and I think we're up 1-0. And the puck just kind of like came up the boards as I stepped on the ice. Like I wasn't on the ice for 10 seconds and I got the puck and went down. Pretty terrible shot, I might add, actually, and somehow went in. And my roommate at the time and like one of my best buddies, Klimchuk, he's coming in to celebrate in the video. And behind him, I can just see this guy skating full speed at me, just like nodding his head and just like shaking his gloves. And he just throws everything off. And I was like, what is going on right now? Like,
was it that nice? Everyone wants to celebrate?
Yeah. Goals aren't easy to come by in the AHL. Like, I want to celebrate this one. I don't want to have to tussle.
So,
is this what it's like every time?
We ended up, I think my only issue with that fight was I would have got out of the box with like 12 minutes left to play in the first period. And like, I didn't play a lot every night. Like I played between slow nights were like 3-4 minutes and like good nights were like 12 minutes. If like we were up or whatever, I didn't see the ice the rest of that period.
Oh no. Gordie Howe.
I was like, but it was the start of the game. And I'm like, I got a goal and a fight. Like, find a way to get me on the sheet.
Like, put you on defense for the breakouts.
That's probably the only time I've been mad at a coach for not like putting me on the ice. Like,
yeah.
That's funny. Talked about hockey for a while. We kind of want to touch on the ECHL. I mean, I listened to the Chicklets podcast and they tell some good stories about that league as well. Do you have any stories from that league and kind of what the transition was like from the A to the E?
I want to say like that the league gets a bad rap for sure. And yeah. I feel like a lot of people who say that are like guys who played and like just to like defend it. But I truly do believe it gets a bad rap. But there's a lot of good players in the East Coast that like out of college, didn't have contracts. Like there's only so many contracts that can go around, even American League deals, because guys are coming down on NHL deals. So there's only so many guys that can play everywhere. And, you know, like met a lot of great people in Kansas City and Toledo. I would say the biggest like difference is they call it the jungle, or call the AHL the jungle too. But like the coast is another animal. Like I remember I got sent down and they told me I was flying cross country, and then I was actually doing it with a teammate, thank God. And so we flew Stockton to Kansas City. It was like a 40-minute car ride from Kansas City Airport to the rink. And then we got there at like 11:30, met the guy, fit us for gear. 12 o'clock, the bus left for Fort Wayne, Indiana, which was a 11-hour bus through the night.
Oh,
well, like my first
flights in the OHL to that is a bit tough, right?
Yeah, my first experience on a sleeper bus was that, and it's sleepers aren't as bad as like people make them out to be, because when you travel through the night, generally if you get a half decent sleep, it's like,
yeah.
Did some of that last summer, like I was traveling Europe, so there'd be some 12-hour flights, and I was like, holy fuck, there's no way I'm going to get through this. But it's like, you throw a couple of Netflix shows on, and then you're asleep for half. It's not too bad, right?
That's part of it. But East Coast it's a grind, man, and it's everyone's fighting and scrapping. And down there, actually, you get a lot, not a lot more, but you get kind of like the nitty-gritty guys who just kind of want to fight all the time. And it's like, I think I fought 2 or 3 times in the coast in 2 years. Like,
oh, really?
Just kind of, that was also after I got knocked out, so like kind of uninterested, like
yeah. Was that what kind of slowed it down? You were like, that's not for me anymore, it's not worth it.
I think it was that, but I got knocked out in Stockton, year was over, went back to Stockton next year, got sent down to Kansas City, played half the year in Kansas City, then I was in front of the net on the power play, and the D-man took a shot, and I couldn't get out of the way, and he shattered my thumb into 30 pieces.
Oh,
then I had to get surgery, and then I came that end of my year in KC, went to sign with Toledo the next year. 7 games in, guy lifts my stick, catches my thumb, breaks the other bone in my thumb. So. Terrible. My right, a lot of beating, and my face did, and I was just like, okay, probably a good time to call it. Like,
yeah. So it's funny. I was looking at it, like, you played for the Walleye, and you are a big fisherman. So is that kind of what you've taken over after hockey, or you're really into the fishing? I know Jackie and I aren't really into the fishing, but I think that's just seeing your Instagram. That's something you're really into, eh?
Sure, I was a big fisherman probably since I always fished when I was younger a bit, but I bought a boat when I was 16. I wanted a Sea-Doo, but I bought a boat instead because my dad convinced me it was probably a bit better purchase. It's just a little tin can, and then I kind of taught myself how to fish. And down here in the Detroit River and like Lake Erie, we catch walleye or Canadian pickerel. So to be honest, like once I found out there was a team called the Toledo Walleye, I was kind of like, I'm playing for that team at some point.
Need the jersey on the wall.
100%.
Free gear.
So last year we actually made it to the finals and we lost in game six. And I was so mad because like, I didn't really play a big role. And like, I knew I had it in me because I wanted that walleye ring so bad. It just, I was, no one was going to stop me from getting it. Or the coach not playing me. So
that's funny. You want to kind of get off hockey? We've been talking about it almost the whole time. I know, looking at your, what's that?
Yeah, fishing, running, whatever.
Let's go a different route. Are you okay with going the Survivor route? I've seen you're a big Survivor fan, but I was creeping our Instagram to find some inspiration for the podcast, and I heard you're a massive Survivor fan. Is that true?
Yes. So actually season 40 just wrapped up, and it was the season of all the champions. So everyone that was on before. And kind of mixed emotions about how the season went, not based on who won, just like, I don't know. I had a favorite. My favorite didn't win. So like, I was kind of like, I don't really care. But
So I watched it, me and my sister, my mom, since I was in quarantine, and then Jackie watched it too. So give us your favorite and tell us why you were pissed off.
Well, Boston Rob was my favorite. He's just
of course.
Classic.
Like everybody. Yeah. It's just a cliche answer. It's like,
For the podcast, I pulled up the contestants and it says, I didn't know his last name is Mariano. I thought it was Rob. I thought his first name was Boston at this point. So you were okay when he did that whole like silence, everyone sits together, no one talks about anything kind of event. You know what I'm talking about?
I thought it was an interesting play and I actually didn't think they were going to be able to pull it off, but you got to remember like, the big thing what they talk about Survivor is like there's so much footage they're going through. They're going through like 72 hours of footage and cutting it to an hour. So like they get to control how we see it.
Yeah, so exactly.
They might not have showed someone be like, okay, this is what we're doing. So
yeah.
But yeah.
So why were you mad Rob was out? Just because you felt like because he was like almost the GOAT, he didn't even have a chance?
Well, if you listen to him talk, if you haven't watched seasons before, everyone's like, oh, like the Rob father or whatever. Like, he's just like that.
Yeah.
So I just like knew he was the biggest target the whole time. And that's why his wife got voted out right like second. And it's just like,
it's tough though. Like she had kids. She went out like the second week and the kids are sitting at home. Like it'd be almost tough. Like there's another guy to win the 2 million. I would find it tough emotionally to stay there when there's somebody, another, like your partner there to win the money.
And like the worst part was, is she's just like giving him all her assets. She's just like, just take this and try and win.
He's running up the hills and like, there's some people who are like pencil thin, like made for running. And it seemed like everything on the edge of extinction just had to do with like running to the top of the hill, grabbing something and then coming back. And it's like, I don't know, there wasn't much like strategic stuff on that side. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's kind of the impression I had from watching it.
No, me and my friends have talked about extinction. We don't really like it. It's just, especially how they bring the people back so late.
It's just ridiculous. I like when they had the challenges every time, but this time it was just like, hey, she popped in there and almost won. She was what, 4 votes away from winning?
Sure. And actually, Michelle played a better game than she got credit for. And the problem was, is if those people at the end are voting for who they wanted to win, they shouldn't have voted for Michelle. But like, Michelle was a lot closer than it looked like, even though she didn't get a single vote.
Yeah, and she won a couple clutch. That's what it came down to. She won a couple clutch immunity necklaces as well as Tony. That's what it came down to, because both weeks when they won those, they were going to get voted out. So it's kind of crazy how it works like that.
Yeah, I would say Tony, Ben, or Sarah were going to win regardless of who made it to the final three, in my opinion.
I was actually, I'm not as of religious of a Survivor fan. I have watched it and I really do like the show, but I don't usually cheer for somebody like Tony. But when it came down to the final five, I found that I wasn't really cheering for anyone, and he was kind of the one who stuck out for me. I don't know who you were kind of rooting for. I know Jack, who picked it up in the final, he was into Tony too. Team Tony. But just like climbing up in the trees, it was almost comical. I don't know what you thought about
it. As soon as I learned that, he did that.
You can't make that up.
This guy's the man.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Like, why has no one ever, has no one done that before?
I always just like up there, gets down and he goes, I was up there for a kill it.
He's like, oh, my arms are so sore.
He's just in the middle of a storm too. He's just the man.
So on the Survivor website, I'm not sure if you guys have checked this out, but it says there's a couple questions to do with their poll. And it says, what does Survivor mean to you and your family? Survivor has been a financial blessing to me, Tony says. And then the next question, what is one way playing Survivor has changed your life? Financially, explanation mark, is the next answer to the question. And you see his house in the finale. It's like, it clearly has. Would you want to go on the show?
Yeah, and it's actually like kind of pathetic that I have not applied yet, and they do accept Canadian applicants.
There was a hockey player, wasn't there?
Yeah,
on there recently.
Yeah, he was older, but
you got to apply. Yeah,
like I agree, and I,
you could grow the perfect beard for it too.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say, yeah.
I feel like I'd be like easy keep for like at least the first like 8 days, 9 days, and like because I would just be like a physical asset, we'd win challenges, but then I feel like people would be like, strategically, this guy's just a liability, like we can't have him. Like, I would just be like annoyed the whole time, like
I'll beat up anyone that votes me out.
You
and the winner is Hunter.
You won't let Jeff like let out your fire, you just beat everyone else up and you stay in there.
His string's like at the fucking very bottom.
Oh, that's funny. What do you think about in regards to how real the show is? Because every time I watch it, and me and my sister talk about this a lot, it's like you see them go out on this island and it appears as if they're the only ones out there. But it's like there must be people going through constant problems, like cutting themselves, like running into dehydration, and they never show that. What is your thoughts on that? Like how real the show actually is?
I think if you looked at it when it originally aired, it was like very, very real. I would say now it's better policed, as far or not policed, but like they probably always had med checkups every day, but like now I see people out there with band-aids and stuff, and they probably maybe had like a couple of issues with people getting like slight infections, and they're like, let's just not have to deal with this, and let's just like give them the basic survival needs, like as far as antibiotics go. But like I don't think they got a Coleman grill back there, and they're like, oh yeah.
Jeff orders a pizza.
It's like a full mansion behind on the other half of the island.
They just don't turn the cameras.
They didn't have it this year, but they usually have like Ponderosa episodes where all the people that got voted off go, and it's just like a resort, get whatever you want, just drink all day. Like,
well, they did have they had like an early family episode this year, right? Just because there was like, I don't know why, but it almost fit perfectly with everything that was going on with COVID, where it was like, it was just starting, and then you had that like wholesome family episode. It was almost like perfectly played by them.
No, and then like, obviously it didn't really matter when the family episode was because everyone's family came, so.
Exactly. Another thing on the list, I saw on your Instagram that you kind of have like a bucket list running. You've got you ran a marathon. Kind of talk about how that was different from kind of training for hockey, and if you have any stories about that.
So obviously, like we've talked about how large I am as like a human. So like I would joke about people like when I'm done playing, is everyone would joke that I'm going to be 295 pounds. It's like as soon as I was done, I was like, okay, I need to hold my, like, I think I got kind of, I was starting to get thicker and thicker and thicker. And I was like, all right, like, I got to
let the joke become funny.
I can't let this happen. Yeah. I think I was about to like hit a point of no return where it's just like, now I'm just like too lazy and can't do anything, like where it's never going to come off. So I signed up for it. I've always liked running and stuff like that. And like, now it's like, kind of turned into an addiction. Like it's kind of stupid. Like, and like my buddies are like, what are you doing? And it's just I went and bought a road bike. Like now I'm looking into like all the bigger races. Like
really? So it is like you got that runner's high going?
No, the runner's high is a real thing, believe it or not.
Really?
It is alarming to like think about, but I remember when I finished the marathon, you know, my buddies like went out in Detroit that night and like just got like so drunk, but like I was just like, I'm never running again. And the first thing I said when I woke up in the morning is like, okay, like where can I sign up for another one? So it's unfortunate because I had goals this year to run that and a triathlon, and like now that's just probably not going to happen. So
yeah.
So where was your marathon, and do you plan on running in something like the Boston Marathon? Like, would you kind of set up a trip for something like that?
So yeah, so a big thing with it is the Detroit Marathon is here, and it actually crosses over the bridge into Windsor. Okay. And then you run through, and then you cross back through the tunnel, and okay. Then you run more.
Oh.
So about a third of it is in Windsor, and Boston you have to qualify for. So yeah. I ran like 3:54, and you have to run, for my age group, you have to run under 3. So I'd have to shave like 2 minutes a mile off, which is a lot. And like that probably is the end goal, but I understand it's a 5 or 6 year process. It's not like I'm just going to run faster.
Yeah.
Bigger steps.
So,
yeah. Or bigger shoes.
A big thing with marathons is traveling. Like neither one I was going to do this year was going to be the Detroit. Like I was looking at Vegas, San Diego, Banff, Alberta, like they're all over.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah.
And just like the scenic views of them is like way different. And like the Windsor one was, the Detroit one was great because you did get to run over the bridge and through the tunnel. And it's like, it's just Windsor and Detroit. But like for a guy who's lived here his whole life, like never walked across the bridge or anything. So it's kind of fun.
Can you take that in when you're running though, when you're in the zone? Like, are you really absorbing what's around you?
The bridge is like 2 miles in. So like, it's like you're still pretty fresh. And like the sun's just coming up at that point because I think the race started at 7, so it was probably like 7:15, 7:20 when we were on the bridge, and it was actually, yeah, it was nice. Like it wasn't anything to like write a book about, but it was it was nice.
Take a couple selfies, but
yeah, but no, people are stopping. I'm like, okay, it's not that nice.
Let's see a bridge again, guys.
If you cross the Detroit Windsor Tunnel, there's like 2 flags on both sides that are just like painted on the tile where it like marks. So there's a Canadian flag and American. It just like marks where the middle is. The amount of people stopping and taking a picture of these goddamn flags, man, like no one cares, but what?
That's hilarious.
I'll let everyone know.
That's funny. So is anything else on the bucket list? I kind of saw that was like your bucket list post. What's kind of next? I know you said you wanted to get into the triathlon. Is there anything outside of kind of the running sphere and the athletic sphere?
A lot of it's travel. Like I've never been overseas. That was a big thing I wanted to do this summer, which obviously is not going to happen, which is super unfortunate again. Like, just like some other stuff, like hike one of the highest 7 peaks, like that's kind of fitness based, I guess, but like a little more enduring, like
yeah
and
you can kind of mix that in with the travel, right?
Yeah, and like graduate universities on there, like simple things too, right? Like
and what school was it that you were going to?
NYU Windsor right now.
Oh, nice. Was there any specific travel spots that you were looking at?
I would say like big time right now, like I really want to go to Australia.
Nice.
I had a buddy do exchange over there, and I was kind of looking, I was actually supposed to go to an exchange meeting to like look into it or like find more information about it. And then COVID happened. So that like the meeting got canceled, like let alone, and I wasn't even going to apply till next year, but hopefully next year, like third year for my third year, there's the exchange again, because I know people that were over and like couldn't get back from Italy and like, yeah, place.
I feel terrible who people who went out there for say a month or two and then had to come back, because I went in third year. I was lucky enough, I went to Finland, so I was like just an awesome experience. I have so many stories from that. So I, like you were saying, you're interested in it. If you do have a chance and like all of this stuff washes over, definitely take an opportunity and do that, because that was like one of the best. I have some of my best stories from going over on exchange for sure.
Are you guys graduated?
I'm graduated. I graduated in 2019.
Yeah, and I have one more year left.
You're at Queens?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, I go to college in Scarborough.
And so, like, at this point, we kind of just want to throw it off to you, honestly. Any stories you want to tell, any good things you have wrapped up, or anything you kind of want to promote or talk about, we throw it off to you at this point.
Anything I want to promote or talk about?
If you're starting a podcast, you can now plug that.
Oh, straight up. Actually, 100%. And I can't believe I just forgot that. Yeah. So, me and my friend, or the guy who did exchange in Australia, we're starting a podcast, and we're supposed to start it in, like, probably pretty soon. Like, we were about to buy the gear and everything, and then COVID happened. And funny, because school, or I was in school, so I was like, okay, give me like a couple weeks. And he's texting me every day, and he's like, hey, like, can we do this? And I'm like, man, like, I can't talk about this right now. I have stuff I have to, I can study for exams. Like, and he's like, okay, well, like, we got to figure this out. He gets hired by the fire. I finished my school, and he's in fire. He's like doing the fire training now. So he's been doing fire for 10 weeks. I haven't heard from him. I texted him yesterday. I go, are we still friends? Like, what's going on? And he goes, I'm lost with this stuff. I go, we haven't talked about the pod. Like, are we still doing it? So,
what's the theme?
It's called Quarter Life Crisis. And, you know, it just kind of feeds into, like, people, like, especially, like, our age, millennials, just, like, not being, like, stressed about where you're at. Like, understanding that, like, kind of everyone's at that position. And it's, like,
yeah.
24 years old, and I'm in first year university. Like, I walked into class this year, and, like, kids were asking me to buy them alcohol.
I'm only 16.
Great feeling.
And, but I didn't realize that, right? Like, I went to the bar with a couple guys, and it's like, I didn't realize they were 18. And then, like, yeah. I died, and I was like, what is going on right now? So,
oh, shit. Yeah.
I was just, it's like, I don't have an issue with it or anything, but,
yeah.
Not for me. Like, all my friends are working full time, and it's like, I've just taken it. I worked for 4 years, and they were at school, and now, yeah. And that's how it is. So, yeah. Just kind of.
You've got the stories for it, though. I definitely listened to the podcast. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's funny, man. I didn't even know. That's hilarious.
How you say that?
Yeah,
that's funny.
What's with so is there a certain, like, a boat you own? Is that your boat that you have in your Instagram handle?
Yeah. So the first boat I bought, it was a 16-foot aluminum Sylvan Sea Snapper. And, like, Sea Snapper is like a Dodge Neon. Like, it's like the neon. But it just became like a running joke that, like, because it just said Sea Snapper on the side in, like, big bold letters, that it was like, oh, are we going out on the Sea Snapper today? So, and my dad would start coming with me. My dad's 59 now, so, like, not that he's immobile, but, like, him being on, like, a little tin aluminum boat is, like,
kind of probably going over.
Yeah, he needs something a little more stable. So he was just kind of like, we were actively, like, in the market watching, and he was like, if we see something come up, do you want to sell yours, and we'll get into this? So I sold mine, and then we ended up splitting on this one. So then we just named it the Sea Snapper 2, which is
funny. That's hilarious. That's funny. All right. Jack, you don't have any more questions?
No, I think we got into a lot of it.
Yeah. Honestly, Hunter, you've told a bunch of legendary stories, best stories we've had on the podcast for sure so far. If you don't have anything more to tell or anything more to promote, we'll send it off to you if you have anything. If not, we'll close her down.
Well, thanks, boys. Cheers. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. No, good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on, and maybe in the future, if you have some more stories, we'll get you back on at some point, or I'll definitely be listening to your quarter life broadcast. That's for sure.
On the Schwa in the summer and stuff opens up, we'll go for a beer.